Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hey, hey, this is Liberty Lisa. Thanks so much for listening into the Truth Train. And today we have an exciting show going. Austin, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, special guest with me is Austin Thomas, who I'm actually dragging through this process of discovering minimalist living myself. Poor little Austin is like, dragging his heel.
yeah.
But I got to tell you, you know, I have my big house out in Colorado that I lost to foreclosure, basically with fraudulent documents through U.S. Bank, and you know, that whole thing was just horrifying. And I spent about $2,000 a month to live there when you take the mortgage, and actually more than that. And on top of it, you had, all your utilities and everything else. And I had nothing to show for it, man. I mean, it was hard to come up with that as a single woman for all those years. And, yeah, I did pay it on my own for, like, I don't know, five or six years, something like that. I'd have to look at my records. But anyway, then I moved out here to Vegas, and I had all this stuff that I'd accumulated in that big house, so we needed another big house to put it in. And, oh, my God, moving a four-bedroom house from one state to another is very motivating to get rid of your stuff. And because I've had health problems and everything, I haven't even felt well enough to, you know, go through everything yet, but you know, the place that we're renting, we're going to have to move again. And I'm like, I do not want to move. I never want to move again. And I'm tired of paying these big house payments. I mean, if you really look at how much of a house you use, you're usually using the kitchen, the living room where you sit and watch TV and have guests and talk or whatever, and your bedroom, you know, and occasionally you'll have a guest. So, meanwhile, you're heating the rest of the house, you're air conditioning the rest of the house, and you're in slavery to the banks because, or to renting. Either way, you're taking the bulk of your money towards your house. And I know, you know, Austin and I, it's really tough for living on his income, and although he makes a decent living, you still got gas, you got insurance, you got credit cards, you've got, you know, all the utilities, you've got your food, you know, and by the time you're all said and done with all that, you're living paycheck to paycheck. And what if we had a crash, you know? What if things go south? What are you going to do, you know? You don't have money saved, and what do you have to show for it? You don't really own anything. Even with a mortgage, you don't even own anything. They'll snatch it right from you if you're late. So, I don't know. I just started watching some shows on HGTV about tiny homes and tiny house living. And I just thought, you know, I think I could do that. And not if you knew how much stuff I had, you'd laugh. Austin, How much stuff do I have?
You have so much stuff.
Yeah, I had a four-bedroom house in Colorado, plus a basement with another two bedrooms in it, and plus storage in my garage that I hadn't gone through in years and years because I'd been focusing on the lawsuits. So anyway, I literally came out here in a semi truck and filled the thing. It was a 52-foot truck, and there was a small load in the front of it, and my car got in there, but the rest of it was my junk. And I haven't even unpacked everything yet, just because there's so much to go through. And, like I said, I've been having health problems, but I don't know. I don't need all that stuff. I've been living just fine without it. You know, Austin likes a minimalist living anyway. I mean, he's kind of more of a modern. He doesn't like all the clutter and all the knickknacks and stuff. And I started thinking about it. I'm like, you know, what do I need all this junk for? What does it mean at the end of the day? And really nothing. You just want to have, or at least for me, I just want to have high-quality items in a small amount of space, things that I like, things that I enjoy, and then be debt-free. Right? I mean, think about it. If your mortgage or payment on doing something like this is $500 or $600 a month, or you've got 2 to 3 times the disposable income to save to buy, you know, guns and ammo and food or whatever is your nirvana, whatever makes you happy in this life. You've got a freedom that goes along with it. And it's not like you have to compromise that much. It's just you can have a nice quality kitchen with top-of-the-line appliances. It's just smaller. You can have, a nice bedroom. You just don't have room for all the furniture. It's those sort of things. You make sacrifices. And one of the other things I was looking into is if you actually – keep it on wheels like a tiny home, then it becomes like an RV and you don't have to pay real estate taxes. It literally becomes like a recreational vehicle, and so you don't have the real estate taxes on it. So once it's paid for, it's paid for. I mean, I think that's the biggest taste of freedom that you can get nowadays. It's hard to make ends meet the way it is. It's really hard. What are your thoughts, Austin?
Well, I'm with you, but I mean, I keep saying that we have the hunting cabin on 38 acres in Michigan with Huron National Forest on three sides. We could always revamp that cabin. It's off the grid, baby. And Ethan's gonna join the round table too. When we first started the network, he had the sustainable farmer. He had a show with us for a few times. We're going to bring him in.
Sure. Well, I will say one thing real quickly since you brought up the cabin. I have no interest in living in a cold environment. I mean, I moved from Colorado to Vegas, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, this Vegas winter is amazing. Of course, the summers here suck because they're hot as hell. But 9 months out of the year, it's gorgeous here, and I prefer to be warm. I'm just not one of those people who likes to be cold. So, unfortunately, the whole hunting cabin in the freezing Michigan, where it gets like negative 20 degrees, I have moved.
Hold on a second. We've got acres of wood oak. For fuel, we do the Ben Franklin stove. We actually have rain in Michigan, so you can collect rainwater. There is white-tailed deer, rabbit, pheasant, turkey, fishing. You know that sustainable stuff, you know, like food, water.
Yeah, you know what? That sounds really great in the summertime. And actually, I don't even want to be here in the summertime. So, yeah, let's go there in the summer. Sounds good. Anyway, all right, Ethan, join in.
Hey, guys, long time no see or no talk to. How's it going
I
out there?
Know. How are you?
Good.
Well, I'm still kicking like a mule. You guys are talking about tiny houses, and I've got an interesting tiny house that we are in the midst of constructing. It's a 36-foot box truck that I am converting to a house, a shop, and a stables.
Nice.
Take on a 4,800-mile trip next year, stopping in 315 cities.
You know what? Actually, that's funny you mention that. I had thought of a box truck. The thing that I don't like about the tiny house is really it has to be on a trailer that maximum is 8.5 feet wide. And so you're looking at 8 feet of living space, if that, on the interior. And that can be a little bit crowded, although you can get them, you know, 30. Well, from what I understand, and I'm still researching it, you can go up to 32 feet without permits and problems, you know, with registering and all that other stuff. But once you get past that, I guess it's a little more complicated.
Well, we're gonna have to investigate into that further, because I like the idea of the 9.5 by 8 by 40 foot long, the solid steel, shipping container. Drop it right on that 40 foot trailer with your 2 or 3 axles. Of course, you have your gooseneck hooked up right up to your pick 'em up truck, and it's an RV. It's a camper trailer, and you still don't have to register it as an actual living space or a permanent structure.
Yeah, but if you go over 26,000 pounds, you have to register it as a commercial vehicle and get a CDL. So, like the vehicle that I'm building right now, we've got it figured out where we're going to be like 25,500 pounds. We're about 500 pounds under the legal limit with passengers is what we're kind of figured it out to try to keep from having to do the CDL and the DOT numbers and all the rest of that.
Yeah, that's the last thing you want to do. We actually looked at, they've got the back end of semi-trucks. We just went to a storage facility today to see what, you know, what they had. And we liked, really, these big shipping containers are nice. And here's why I like them. Because they're built to be stacked. So they're strong, strong, strong. And I want something that we can actually climb on the top and have a deck, you know, have a little roof. Well, if you can't really do that on a bus, or, I mean, you can, but it's really not safe. And, you know, you're dealing with a lot thinner materials and aluminum and everything else, whereas you use these shipping containers, and it's built solid to take a heavy load. So I was thinking about making it where, you know, you have the upper floor loft with the bedroom, and then you open these small doors, and you go out, and the whole top of it's a deck. You know, so let's say we had to cut it down to 32 feet to stay within restrictions or whatever. You know, you'd have probably a 20-foot deck on the top of this thing to get expansive views of your surroundings and fresh air, you know, right outside of your bedroom. So, and then you could do like a, if it's 32 feet, a 10-foot kitchen, a 10-foot living room, and a 10-foot bathroom that includes a washer and dryer and a full bath and everything. So, you know, you can live nice in that sort of a space. And by the way, the cost out here in Vegas for one of those shipping containers is $2,500. So that's not bad.
I got my box truck cheaper than that, Lisa.
Oh, did ya?
Yep, I paid $300 for it.
How much?
$300.
Holy crap.
It didn't run, and I had a tree growing through the bumper, but I only paid $300 for it, and it cost me another $200 to make it run.
Wow, that's crazy. Well, you know what I like about the box truck idea is it's nice and high, it's nice and wide, you know, and I don't think you have to have, it, like you said, a commercial license for that. So
as long as
that's
I
not,
stay under, as long as I stay under 26,000 pounds with this truck, I don't have to have a commercial license because it doesn't have air brakes and it's not heavy enough. And I'm taking the underside area and I'm putting, like, for instance, I'm having a compartment where my welder goes, a compartment to store my firewood, different compartments on the bottom using up that space. And then above the cab, I'm building an area to store the hay for the critters.
I love it. I love it. I do. I think it's great. And there's enough space in something like that to really do some things with it. Especially, I mean, I could see something like that for Austin and I if it wasn't your standard, you know, whatever, 14-footer. It would have to be the longer one. I don't know at what point you have to get a commercial license, but I think it's after 32 feet, right?
No, actually, it has nothing to do with the feet. It has to do with the overall weight, the GVW of the vehicle. And as long as when you title it, like when I titled this vehicle, I made sure to title it under the legal limit. And if they take me and drive me across the scale, as long as I don't cross that 26,000-pound limit, I can put whatever I want in this truck.
Cool. Cool.
Nice.
So how's your activism going? What are you doing?
Well, I'm getting ready to do this event next year where I'm going to, December 19th, I'm kicking it off at the Liberty Bell, take back our food, our farms, and our families, and I'm starting it at the Liberty Bell on December 19th, and then on New Year's Eve, I plan on being at the Space Needle with llamas and goats and alpacas and whatnot in tow, and then I plan on walking from the Space Needle all the way down to Tacoma, then Olympia, then all the way down the West Coast, and having the truck follow me so I got a place to sleep and the critters got a place to eat and be comfortable, and actually walking all the way across the United States.
Wow.
So the truck says take back our food, our farms, and our families on the side of it in big letters.
Well, we need to. I mean, we've really been taken over on every level, and people are seeing it in the narrow scope of how they're affected personally. But people like you and I who have been fighting in this fight see that it's a pervasive scheme, a web of deceit that is encompassing every area of our life.
Yep. I mean, I spent all last weekend at the Mother Earth Fair out by Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, participating in their adventures out there. And I'll tell you what, out of probably 30,000 people, there might have been 20 of them that didn't know what was going on. The rest of them seemed fairly awake.
We are seeing an awakening. That's what I have noticed that. It seems to be changing.
Well, then we need to keep educating so we get the rest of these folks that haven't woke up yet.
You know, I think it's part of the reason there's such an awakening is people are being so personally affected by it. When it's not just a bunch of, you know, people talking about it, but it's actually, oh, you know, my 9-year-old sister got cancer. Why is a 9-year-old getting cancer? You know? Or, you know, my grandmother or my child was kidnapped by CPS or my grandmother, they robbed her estate through the probate courts, whatever. You know, farmers like yourself who are kicked off their land because they wouldn't inject their animals with chemicals or feed them crap GMO food.
It's a mess. But we need to do what we can to fight back, and I think one way is to wake them up, and I think walking critters into the New Year's Eve party in Seattle ought to be some fun. I do plan on walking to Vegas with a llama, too, just so you know.
You're going to walk to Vegas with a llama?
Oh, yeah. I plan on going right down the strip with a llama.
Yeah, well, let us know when you're in town, and we'll come down there and join you.
Well, that's what I want. I want people to join me from town to town. If you look on the justusriders.org website, there's a calendar with every city and every town when I plan on being there. And as long as they don't arrest me in one and hold me up, I'll be at the next one on time.
Yeah.
Austin's laughing. Clearly, he's never lived in my shoes. I've been arrested.
I'm laughing at you. I'm with you. I think it's great.
Yeah, he's not laughing at you, hon. He's very supportive.
I don't think he'd walk a llama down the strip, because I intend to walk that same llama through Seattle, through Portland, through every major city in California, through Farmington, Las Vegas, Tulsa, Kansas City. I even intend to walk it right up to Monsanto's front door and tell them what I think of them. And then I intend to mosey on across the country through Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, New York, go all the way down the coast, hit Atlantic City, then hit Maryland and Delaware, and then by election day, I want to be at the White House with me and my llama.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you took your llama, if you put like a little bell on it and a little change bucket, walked them down the strip, you'd have people patting your llama and giving you tips.
Yeah,
well,
I'm sure.
To help fund it along the way, because needless to say, I'm not a rich individual. So, but, you know, it is what it is. And I think that the man upstairs takes care of those who do what they can.
He takes care of those who take care of others. And that's the whole thing that we, you know, that we're supposed to do in this life is love your neighbor. But I want to get back on topic here. And I know, actually, I'm glad you called, because I think it's cool what you're doing with the box truck, obviously. And that's something we'll have to look into as well. But what ideas do you have for people who want to minimalize and scale down and live off the grid and try to live debt-free? What ideas, what experiences, what can you share with the audience?
I've helped build probably a dozen tiny houses at this point on both coasts and all the way in between. And I would say the people that reuse material, there's a lot of material out there that can be gotten for little or nothing or close to it. And get creative with your space. Utilize every square inch. That's what we're doing with this truck. And do things like, a lot of people are like, well, I want to go solar. Well, I don't think that solar is necessarily the best bang for your buck. I think going with a biodigester or a gasification system. I have another truck out here that I've been working on, and it's an 85 international, and I've got it running on wood. I've got it running off of gasification, but the issue I have with it is it's not reliable enough to take cross country. So, I mean, think outside the box. Just because everybody thinks solar is the way to go, solar is not necessarily cost effective. And if you're trying to do this on a shoestring, look around. I mean, I saw this truck parked in somebody's field. I went up to the door, I knocked on the door, I said, hey, what do you want for that truck? Well, it doesn't run in years. Well, what's wrong with it? Well, we just put a new engine and a new transmission in it, we drove it about 20,000 miles, and then the power steering pump gave out, and we couldn't find the new one. Okay. What do you want for it? Well, what will you give us for it? Well, I'll give you $300. You got cash? Yep. You got a title? Yep. Okay, deal done. And then I took off and went and found the power steering pump. And, I mean, think outside the box. There's plenty of people out here that have things sitting out in the backwoods that they don't know what to do with it, and you can make it into a tiny house. I mean, I've done buses, I've done trailers, I've done trucks, I even did a shipping container, and I don't like the shipping container so much because they're too hard to work with for the average person. Most people don't have the tools necessary to cut through one of those and put in a window.
Yeah. Well, I was talking to Lisa, too.
I saw them for 25,000-30,000. You get those what is it, 54 passenger vans, and convert one of those out.
Yeah, I mean, it's not hard, and people will almost give you, like, the international truck that I got. I got that one for $500, and it came with brand new tires, and those tires are $800 a piece. So you figure, I paid $500 and I got a vehicle with six $800 tires. Even if I sold the tires, I still come out ahead.
Right. Yeah, that was a no lose situation. Then we went and looked at these containers. That's it. That's interesting too. But I want to keep it on wheels, and then, you know, so like I said, I want a trailer. Just drop it right on a trailer, and there's going to be some modifying have to be done there in those wheel wells.
Yeah, and that shipping container is going to ratchet up your weight really quick.
Yeah,
you're going to be burning up pounds, and if you hit that 26,000 pound mark, then you're going to be talking to the DOT and the feds to try to get plates for the thing.
Well, I know how to make the inside pretty light, though. I mean, for example, I wouldn't do granite countertops or stone back splashes or whatever. It would be, you know, maybe like stainless steel cabinets, and then have a like butcher block countertops, wood floors, you know, things that are a little bit lighter.
Well, we'd have a problem because those steel shipping containers weigh about 32,000 pounds.
They do?
Yeah. I think they're 3,200 pounds. I don't think they might be 32,000, but I think empty they're about 3,200.
Yeah, 3,200 sounds right. They can't be that 32,000.
Well, I got the specs on the link. I'm going to go inside and take a look. It was for a new one. It was for one of those 8x40, 9.5 foot high. I thought the gross weight on them was 32,000 pounds. Let me go double check.
Yeah, if it's 32,000 pounds, you're not putting that thing on the boat. You know, I stayed in a shipping container up there in northern Colorado for a little while, up there on the Colorado-Wyoming border on that one ranch I was staying at. And I will tell you, they're interesting. They echo real good. And, yeah, they actually buried theirs in the ground, so you had an issue with water trying to run down the hill and in the door when it rained.
Let's see. 40-foot
if you did that container, you're gonna be pretty much not have to worry about heating and cooling. You're going to be below the frost line.
Yeah, that's why they buried it, and they also buried it because it was made into like a bunker type, a prepper type hideout up there at that ranch that I stayed on up there on the Colorado-Wyoming border.
It says that the maximum weight for a 40-foot, 9'6" cube container is 67,000 pounds.
That's CDL country.
That's
Yeah, you're going to be looking at a CDL in order to drive that, and DOT numbers and NAFTA.
No, I think they're talking about with shipment in it. Hold on a minute.
So I'm talking about dry weight, 32,000 pounds.
Let's see, 40-foot high cube container is 6,393 pounds, but you can put up to 62,000 pounds in there.
So if it's only 6,300, then that's definitely workable.
6,400.
So it's 6,400 out of the gate, and so you got another 18,000 pounds, 17,000 pounds if you leave enough room for, you know, your food and yourselves, because you got to figure the average human's got a little bit of weight.
So you said what's the – let me write this down. What's the maximum weight you can do?
26,000 pounds.
26?
26,000.
All right, so that's maximum.
Yes.
So we're
going to go 26,000 and 1 pound, and they pull you over and put you on scales, and you don't have DOT numbers, they take your car.
Now, if you are, is it 26,000 just for the trailer? What about for your truck that's pulling the trailer? Those are two separate entities, right?
No, the entire vehicle. That's the GVW for the entire vehicle. Gross vehicle.
So you're getting another 5,000 pounds for like a Dodge Durango 3/4 ton a maxi cab truck.
Yeah. Yep.
Are you sure? Because they're separate.
I'm sure. It's gross vehicle weight. When they weigh a semi, they weigh the cab and the trailer at the same time.
Yep, that's true.
That's why I went for a box truck so that I would have my cab and my chassis all in one.
What does your box truck weigh?
Empty, it weighs about 4,800 pounds.
4,800?
On it. And now I'm probably going to be, when it's all said and done, somewhere around 22,000 pounds loaded.
Okay. I think we could do it. I mean, you know, if I keep everything in a lightweight, you know, I think we could do it. I don't really see that we'd put that much in there.
Well, I mean,
yeah,
stuff like stainless steel weighs. That has weight to it. Yeah, you'd have to almost go with aluminum or like a faux plastic or something to keep the weight down.
Well, we could always take the bottom of the container off and just put a wood and just put a wood. Well, how would you do that?
What you would have to do, he says, if you would cut into the sides and weld in wheel wells and actually mount your axles directly to the container and eliminate the trailer. Make the container the trailer.
That's a good idea.
Do what?
Go and get yourself like a couple, maybe two or three mobile home axles and cut into the bottom of the container, weld in the wheel wells, and then mount your axles into the container so the container becomes the trailer. And then put your hitch on the front of the container, weld it on.
Right.
I don't know if you can weld.
Well, you just made me think of something. Austin, so you would have to weigh the truck that's towing it, plus the trailer, plus the container. So the trailer is probably another 3,000, or maybe
yep.
not that much.
If you're going to put a container that heavy on it, it's going to have to be fairly stout, or at least the axles are going to have to be pretty stout, or you're going to go down the road and you're going to lose an axle.
Right. There's three 7,000-pound axles on there. So
that 3 times 7,000 is only 21,000. So you can only do
right.
21,000 on that trailer, and then you're going to have to keep your truck under 5,000 with all of your gear in the truck and the humans in the truck, whoever's riding, because when they weigh it, they weigh people, goods, everything. It's a gross vehicle weight.
And it has to be under 26,000.
Yep.
What if it was at 2601?
If they catch you at 2601, you get in big trouble. It's DOT, Department of Transportation.
Okay.
It's a federal issue.
All right. Well, that could change.
We both know we don't like messing with the feds.
Yeah, we'll have to look at that because I didn't even think we would ever be pulled over or asked to weigh it just based on the fact that it's going to be a residential type deal. You know, you don't typically have to do a weigh-in.
if you're going down the highway, the state patrol has the right to pull you over and put you on scales, any vehicle.
Gotcha.
And if you're driving something like that, just like my truck, I can promise you, once the state patrol figures out that I'm in that truck, they're going to pull me over at every state line.
Right.
And they're going to try to see how much I weigh. And hopefully I didn't eat a big breakfast. And then if you're carrying water, water is 8 pounds per gallon. So if you, let's say you have a 100-gallon tank of water, that's 800 pounds.
Right.
So
I'm going to have to really think about all that, you know. The weight issue is going to be a little trickier than I thought with that shipping container, but I like the sturdiness of it, you know.
I bet my truck is just as sturdy.
Not really.
You ever
Not
seen
really.
Me build something, Lisa?
What's that?
Have you ever seen me build something?
Yeah. You could make it sturdier, but I mean, as is, it's not.
No, not as is, but I can frame up the inside of it real easy. And I'm using
right.
1.25 and 1.5 tube steel, which gives me structural strength inside my aluminum box, and it doesn't add to my weight significantly.
Okay,
so 585
and 5.
You there?
Hello. Hey, guys, we just let you in. There's two callers, 585 and what was the other one?
630.
You're hot.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hi.
Oh, hey, Brian. How are we doing tonight? I'm sitting back listening to you guys talking about all these trailers and stuff, and I honestly have no idea what you're talking about. I mean, I know what you're talking about, but I'm moving on the other direction. I want to buy my own island and then annex it from whatever country it's from and start my own country.
Can you do that? It's so funny you said that, because Austin and I have been talking about the same thing. Well, I have. I'm like, you know, I was thinking if we could live off the grid or live in this small capacity home and save our money, you know, maybe we could afford something like that. But then I was just thinking today, well, if you buy an island, then you still have to pay taxes on that, or how does that work?
Well, yeah, I mean, you would until you go to attempt to try to annex your own island, and at which point you're gonna need one hell of a defense system. So, you know, it's either you're gonna put that money in taxes or you're gonna put that money in like surface-to-air missiles. I mean, it's really up to you.
Surface-to-air missiles.
That's at least my thought on this. I was talking to my wife about that, and she's like, "You're nuts." Like, she loves the idea of an island, but she's like, you know. Well, you know, you think it's going to be this, like, anarchist bastion or whatever you want to call it, but, you know, you're still going to have to pay taxes, you're still going to do all this stuff, and if not, they're going to come after us. I'm like, that's why we have gun turrets and surface-to-air missiles.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
I agree. If you're on an island, then you have a really good defense, because they have to come at you from water, and you have an advantage there. Or if they fly over by air, you can always prepare defenses for that. No matter what, you've got, you know, it's not all controlled. There's not cameras everywhere. There's not police everywhere. I mean, you've really got an element of control, and it gives you an edge.
Right.
For
well,
sure. I was telling Austin earlier, you know, you do something like that, and granted, they may come after you, but you're not going to be priority. The first priority when they try to take over the system, it's going to be all the people living in the big cities. That's their first priority.
Right. And I don't often see the IRS coming to, coming in on boats, you know, trying to seize your shit and you know, give you bills and whatnot. So, I mean, it would be a logistical nightmare for, say, for the IRS. I'm sure they have ways, but it would just be so much of a headache for whatever, you know, small pittance that I may owe, that it would probably be something like, you know what, it's not even worth our time. You know, I don't know. That's that's my thought on it. But like I said, I've only looked at it a little bit. I was just, you know, I was always a dream of mine anyways. But that's something that would
well,
be pretty cool.
Maybe,
and if you get enough people
maybe,
together.
Yeah, well, so I was going to say, maybe you and your wife and me and Austin and several other people who are freedom lovers that we all trust.
Right.
You know, can all
right.
pitch in and do it. I mean, what the hell?
Yeah. We can grow our own food. You know, we can fish, whatever the case may be. I mean, there's so many different ways where we can make it almost either completely self-sustainable or just about, you know. So it's,
right.
we wouldn't have to rely
yeah.
on much.
We could get a bunch of these containers and have them barged over and figure, you know, and truck them and set them down and build up shelters out of these huge metal storage container. They sure would be pretty good against hurricanes and typhoons and stuff.
Yeah. They're very,
oh, yeah.
very sturdy, you know, and you could stack them. That's the beauty, you know, and you can lay them on their side. So instead of being 9.5 feet tall, they're 9.5 feet you know, wide instead of 8 feet wide, and stack them.
Right.
You know, and then you've got
the only thing I was concerned with, though, is that to get an island with enough land to grow your food and do that kind of stuff, it's going to be a pretty substantial sized island. So it's not going to be cheap. But, you know, like I said, if we get enough people together, it's certainly possible. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility.
It's possible. It's possible if we all start minimalizing our lives and living a more minimalist
yeah.
life. You know, if you're not paying $2,000 a month for mortgages and, you know, stuff like that, then, yeah, you can start saving your money and putting it towards something like this and then doing little investments and just trying to make your money grow. And, you know, maybe,
right.
you know, if you have got five different families and each one came up with $1 million, that's $5 million.
Right. Yeah, I mean it's certainly doable. I mean, I don't know how long it would take and how what the logistics are with that, but certainly possibility. You know, I mean, I don't know. I think it's way better than living on the mainland and having to deal with the government on a day-to-day basis. You don't know when or where they're gonna strike
I
next.
I know.
Whereas
it's nerve-wracking. I mean.
Right.
Just moving from Colorado to Nevada was a nice break for me because it was a little scary, you know, me being up against the big banks out there and being known in the papers and everything else. It's like, you know, you kind of feel like you're gang stalked sometimes, and it's a little bit crazy. But moving away, I had a degree of separation, which kind of took down the stress level a little bit. But living on an island would be amazing because then you're like, you know, especially if you've got solar and wind and everything else, you got your own water, you got your own electricity, you got your own food, you don't need anything from anyone, and you just live a minimalist lifestyle, and you live in peace, and there's no, you know, government and roads and, you know, getting pulled over for stupid infractions, and, you know, it's just ridiculous. Everything's out of control.
Right.
I was thinking
if we're on a lake or a river or whatever the case may be, hydroelectricity. If we can somehow work that out, you got all the energy you'll ever need is right there in front of you.
You can make electricity in about 20 different ways. You can
do
passive hydroelectric. You can do a pinwheel with an alternator and generate wind power. You can do create energy as far as heat or cooling. You can do a horizontal geothermal. You can do a biodigester. You can do gasification. And those are just some of the ways. And then if you want to go and do an alcohol engine on a generator, you can create alcohol using grain.
Yep. Oh, yeah. There's no one there to
harp down your throat and say, you can't do this and you need a permit, blah, blah, blah. You know, keep your little stupid homeowner associations and your permits and your rules and your, you know, police force everywhere fining people. keep all of that. You can have all of it, you know. I want
right.
to be free.
I'm free. I have all the licenses and permits to prove it.
Isn't that the truth? Hey, Lisa, we're at the halfway point of the show. Can I play some ads, and then we'll pick it up back in a few minutes?
Yeah, first of all, we're actually doing a 90-minute show today because Austin and I are going out to see an Elvis impersonator tonight. So, we're going to cut it off a little early. So we're going to go ahead and play some ads and take care of our sponsors who take care of us here at Truth Emerges. Hang tight, 10 minutes.
Well, I pulled out of Pittsburgh, rolling down that eastern seaboard. I got my diesel wound up, and she's running like I never before.
Hey folks, this is the Mouse, and if you need something moved, you need to go through Dadco Transportation. Family-owned and operated, Dadco Transportation specializes in pad wrap fixtures to retail stores throughout the country, as well as furniture transportation, pad trap and box furniture from California to Arizona to all points east. Be it truckload, LTL, rollout, exclusive use, or expedited, Dadco is here to service their clients safely, efficiently, and quickly. So if you need something moved within the continental U.S., contact Dadco Transportation at 609-296-9121 or contact them directly at dadcotrans.com. That's dadcotrans.com.
Hi friends, when it comes to reaching your audience, the best approach is in person. If you have a band, business, or charity event, you want to reach people in the best ways and venues possible. If you're touring in the Midwest, you need DMI Promotions. Their friendly staff is ready, willing, and able to assist you in venue locations and event promotions to make your show or event successful. Contact Tori Webb at 515-865-4463 or toriwebbdmi@gmail.com. DMI Promotions, your Midwest promotional team and proud sponsor of Truth Emerges Radio.
Free at last! Free at last! Thank God Almighty, we are free at last!
Einstein, she's already ready to rally against the guns.
Well, you're set up for failure, but it doesn't mean you have to fail.
A disarmed nation is ready for tyranny. What about the over 2 million crimes that were prevented by people being armed? This is a representative republic. Democracy is frickin' mob rule. That's what true democracy is. It's mob rule.
It's just like a matter of, you know, you got to be careful who you listen to and whose input you take. And it's all fun and games.
One and only original Gorilla Radio with Austin Thomas and Liberty Lisa. Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Only on the Truth Emerges Radio Network.
You took an oath to uphold the Constitution, not to uphold gangster banksters and a bunch of tyrannous political puppets.
It has to start somewhere. It has to start sometime. What better place than here? What better time than now?
You're listening to The Truth Train with Liberty Lisa. Join the second hour by calling 1-347-855-8301.
All right, guys, Lisa. Welcome back. This is Liberty Lisa, and you are listening to the Truth Train here at Truth Emerges Network. Truth Train is my show, Liberty Lisa, and it's every Tuesday night from 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. But there's a wonderful show every night of the week here on Truth Emerges Radio, Monday through Monday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, all week long, same time every night. We've got all kinds of people here who believe in freedom and liberty. Tune in and see what you've been missing. Tonight we're talking about minimalist living, and Austin and I are seriously considering going down this road. In fact, I've already been dragging him along for the ride. I don't think he's going to believe it until he sees that I've got so much junk. But I am. I'm getting ready to scale back my life. I don't need all this stuff, and I just really want to... I want to enjoy a better quality of life, have some free money, and the way you got to do it is get out of these large mortgages and large rent. I mean, honestly. And you know what else I was thinking about this whole thing is the hardest part about growing up and making your way in the adult world, you know, from a teenager to an adult, is learning how to pay rent and pay all this stuff. And if you're living somewhere like Denver or D.C. or, you know, California, where it's really high cost of living, it's tough, man. You got to live with, you know, other people, and your quality of life is not that great. Why not do your kids a favor and buy them a small little tiny house, build it for them? You know, you could build one of these things for like $12,000, and it's paid for, and they don't have rent to deal with. They have a lot easier time in life to pay their student loans, buy their books, buy clothes, buy food, you know, whatever they got to do.
I'm still waiting for you to scale back, Bobby.
What's that?
I'm still waiting for you to scale back.
Hey, somebody in the background's got a lot of background noise, so if that's you,
that's probably...
please just...
probably me.
Yourself. Okay.
Is that better?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, sorry. I got no air conditioning in my car, so I open up the window every now and again to let some breeze come in.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. It's only 71 degrees in Chicago today, so it's not too bad. But.
Oh, good. All right, so I'm looking for new callers. You see the call-in line on the promo, it's 347, what is it, 855-8301, is that right, Austin?
That's correct.
Call in, press the number one that lets us know, hey, I got my hand up, I want to talk, I want to join in the conversation. I'd love to hear what you have to say. So the other thing, you know, when we talk about minimalist living is, how are you getting your food sourced? You know? If you're going to the grocery store every week, like most of us, then what are we going to do when the whole market crashes and a loaf of bread is $20? What are you going to do to feed your family? You better start preparing for that now, and you can do that by starting to do a small garden. You know, you could pot some plants and at least have some of your food source started out and learn what foods store well. You know, you could do dried, always buy organic whenever possible so you're not getting poison. But there are certain things that store really well. Chia seeds are one thing you could store that are lightweight and they're a complete amino acid profile.
What did you say?
Chia seeds. Chia. Chia. Chia.
Yeah.
And okay, hey Brian.
That's not me.
Okay, Austin.
Okay, is that
you?
No, I don't think so.
All right, Austin, could you please mute everybody? I don't like this.
There, are you okay? Yeah, it was 585. They never chimed in, but it was them with all the background noise. They're muted.
My God.
Yeah. I'm just gonna say because I'm in my car. I mean, I am on my car, but I got the windows rolled up. I got the phone right to my ear. I there's no way that was me.
Okay. It's just kind of rude when you're on live radio. It's like, you know, a little noise here and there. It's fine, but anyway.
And Ethan dropped off. He said sorry, his phone battery died, but thanks to everybody.
Oh, cool. That was neat to hear from him. But yeah, I mean, so, you know, I think this is a real smart discussion, and you know, talking about how are we going to cut down our expenses and start living not necessarily completely off the grid, but cut down. Do you need all that stuff? Do you need all the furniture? Do you need all the square footage? Do you need to pay those big bills? You know, can you think of a way to be more creative? Maybe buy some land, and you could get two or three of these, you know, storage containers. They're $2,000, $2,500 a piece, and you can make a small house for each of your kids, you know?
Right.
And then all of you guys will be handled. You don't have the weight of the world, you know, you're not worried about them. And they can always take it with them when they're ready to go.
Yeah, and you know, speaking of buying your own land, I got kicked off the March Against Monsanto webpage for suggesting that if you guys used all the money that you wasted on going to these rallies, you know, buying all the stuff that you need to go there and this, and you started pulling your resources together, you could buy enough land to, if not put Monsanto permanently out of business, at least put a huge dent in their business by buying your own land and growing your own food and having a co-op. And apparently that was a little too radical for them, and they didn't, appreciate that point of view, and they booted me off the page. So I'm a little bit suspect about, you know, the March Against Monsanto page and stuff like that. It seems to me like they're not actually pushing any real solutions. They're trying to get the government to regulate Monsanto when the government has been helping Monsanto. So you're going to the same entity that has been giving them breaks and, you know, making sure they can't be sued for certain things, and you're going to go back to them and tell them that you want them to do something for your benefit? I don't get that. I don't understand that philosophy.
Well, you know, that's the problem right now with the way our system is set up. You know, basically, you know, supposedly we have a republic where we're represented, but we're not. You know, because all these people are in the back pockets of the bankers. And if you look at Monsanto, it's like a revolving door for the people of the government. Like they, oh, okay, you used to work for Monsanto? Why don't we just put you as a Supreme Court justice? Oh, you used to work for Monsanto? You know, you can be president.
Wait, you are vice president for Monsanto? We're going to put you, you're going to be the head of the EPA.
Yeah.
Right. Or Michael, EPA. What is it, Michael Taylor or something like that?
Yeah, conflict of interest much?
Yeah, right. Right. And I've been saying this, and you've seen it firsthand, Lisa, trying to fight the system within the system that they're providing you for, you know, providing you with. You know, it's the same system that's holding you down, and it seems to me that it's almost absurd to try to fight within that same system. I mean, I know there's not a lot of relevant solutions to do otherwise, but at the same time, once you, you know, take a few steps back and look at it, it's like I'm trying to fight a corrupt system from within that corrupt system and hoping that you're going to somehow break through. It doesn't seem likely to me, but, you know.
Well, it's not likely. The odds are certainly against you. However, if we don't press back, then it's going to be complete tyranny. So I applaud anyone who is fighting because it does show resistance. It does show that the people care. And if we just all give up and throw our arms in the air and say, we can't fight, it's too big, it's too much, you know, it does nothing, then we're a part of the problem. So I do feel that we all need to contribute somehow, and maybe it's just for education, you know, but whatever it is, we need to get out there. And one of the things that I think is really proactive that's important for each of us to do is to get to know your neighbors. And this is something we can all do. Don't just live in a shell. Don't just live by yourself, you know, not talk to your next-door neighbors. Talk to them. Talk to them about Monsanto. Talk to them about 9/11. Talk to them about the way you see the world. Talk to them about how you're preparing. Ask them how they are. And exchange phone numbers. Get to know each other so that when shit goes down, you can help. Hey, what do you guys, you know, what do you guys, oh, we're going to have tons of this. Oh, great, we'll have tons of this, and we can trade if we need to. Perfect. You know, get to know each other, what's the plan is, and then you can come together as cohesive units. You're going to need that when the shit hits the fan.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was looking here at Samuel Adams posted a little camper on a trailer. That was a pretty neat little house. Just looking here on the promo.
Well, you know, like I said, even though we're talking about downsizing, you know, one person, what downsizing is and minimalist living is different than another. I still want to live with some nice comforts and nice things, but I want to minimalize and keep it down to a small amount of space so that Austin and I can pay it off, you know, in a short period of time. And then we can take money. And Brian, it's so funny you talked about an island. I would love to do that. I was looking online for islands yesterday. And there was actually a real small island in the Virgin Islands for like $700,000. And I thought, you know what? That's actually attainable. I mean, not that we have it now or anywhere close, but I mean, if you minimalize and you're not spending your money and you make some good investments and you just, you know, put your money away, you know, you can come up with that kind of that sort of money. And then just pay cash, you know.
Well, that's the thing. You get three or four families on a small island like that, and it's definitely obtainable.
Let me know when you guys are ready, because I'm down.
Well, you know what? We're actually serious. I mean, I'm dead serious about this. We're gonna be moving out of the house that we're in here pretty shortly, and so I want to make some decisions before then, which is why I'm dragging him along on all these things, because it's like I don't want to go move into another huge house and waste our money every single week, every single month, and then at the end of it have nothing to show for it. And meanwhile, you know, this crash is imminent. What the hell? You know, the nice thing about having this mobile situation we're talking about is you could actually get up and go if you needed to, which I don't know how likely that is either. I mean, you'll probably have roadblocks and stuff, but, you know, I don't know. Maybe you could go a little further into the mountains or go get a little more hidden or a little, you know, but at least you could mobilize.
38 acres with miles of Huron National Forest on three sides. Half a mile away from the Asabo River, great fishing.
That's right. That's right, guys. If you want 38 acres in Michigan, it's for sale. We don't want it.
What do you mean we don't want it?
We don't want it.
We've got a hunting cabin with a pump well, and, I mean, it needs a lot of work. It needs some TLC, but we've got the well dug, and we've got water. We've got heat, Franklin stove.
There you go.
Oak. I mean.
That sounds like a fun little place to go on a hunting trip or something in the summer. Isn't that nice? I do not
that sounds like somewhere
cold.
To live permanently.
I do not want to be cold. You know how cold it gets out there?
Over and over. It's too cold. It's only cold 3 months of the year.
I would not leave the house. I would be like, okay, go get the food. Bye.
Oh, really? Is that a promise?
Yeah, I would not leave the house. I would be like, sorry, it's too cold out.
Yep, I can see it now. Hey, Austin, let's go get some food. I got the beer. Let's go.
Well, no.
The women are going to stay in the cottage.
Got the compound bow. Got the white-tailed deer. There's plenty of pheasant for the shotgun. There's plenty of turkey right there. Sustainable.
Boom.
Fish, too. Yeah.
And not to mention you got all that acreage. You could grow your own food all spring and summer long. You'd have plenty of food to last you all throughout the winter.
Yeah, you'd have to do some wiring, though, because those critters, the deer and everybody, they'd like to be eaten on your food source, vegetables.
You could maybe a good solution to that is getting one of these storage units and burying it underground, because it's constant, 62 degrees or 65 or something like that. If you bury something underground, it stays at a constant, you know?
Yeah,
I'll go hang out in the basement.
I mean, realistically, if you have the resources, the funding, you could do it all inside. You could do hydroponics. It's, you know, like I've been to Japan, and that's a country that has literally no farms. Yet they're pretty well self-sufficient when it comes to agriculture, because they have indoor farms run by hydroponics. I mean, you should see these things. They're almost like skyscrapers, but they're big, large spheres that they grow all their food, and they can grow year-round.
Right. Well, the other thing is you pop you a couple windmills, you got your battery farm, you get you your solar panels, and there's actually rainwater to collect in Michigan.
Right. Well, even if it was illegal, we'd still collect it anyway.
Yeah.
I'm not going to collect the rainwater on my fucking property. Get the fuck out of here.
Right, exactly. It's
so ridiculous. I mean, I guess the way they get away with that is they're saying, well, if it landed, it would belong to somebody. So whoever, you know, it would belong to whoever has the water rights in that area. It could have traveled down the hill and got to their facility. So you have to let it go naturally and get to their facility, because it would have gone to them.
Well, it fell naturally into my water collection basin. I mean, it's ridiculous. I think that's absolutely ridiculous, but I get what you're saying, but it's absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, honey, I'm not defending it.
Right. I know. Believe me, I know. It's just.
I am not defending that. I think that is the most... I can't even believe that we're in a society where it's actually illegal to collect rainwater anywhere. I mean, that's so laughable, you know? You know, and that's part of the war against the people who are trying to live off the grid. Oh, yeah, you can live off the grid, but you have to hook into the water system, the city water system. Oh, yeah, you can live off the grid, but you can't collect the rainwater. Oh, yeah, you can live off the grid, but, oh, I'm sorry, we just poisoned your water source through fracking.
Right.
You know? So it's just like, that's why the island thing becomes so nice, because you're like, stay away from me. Just stay away from me.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that is the ultimate dream, at least in my eyes, is to get my own island and then begin the process to annex myself from whatever country it's in. Like, no, I don't want to be part of your country. I'll start my own country over here. I don't need your services. Thank you. Bye.
Well, even though I'm not an anarchist, we could call it Anarchy Island.
And really, you'd only need one rule for the islands. Do no harm.
Do no harm.
That's it. Do no harm.
And then if you do harm, then you know, I guess we'll all figure out between ourselves what we're going to do about it.
Well, exile. You're off the island for a certain amount of time, and if you do it again, you're off the island permanently.
You got voted off the island.
Right.
But that's
the way they used to do it, and they still do it in quote-unquote primitive cultures. They don't have jails. They don't have any of that stuff. If you commit something wrong against another person, they exile you. First they'll shun you, and then they'll exile you. And you got to go live on your own in the forest somewhere, or wherever the case may be. But that's the way they used to do it. And that's the way they do it in primitive cultures. And it works.
That's true. If you mess up, you know, then you don't get to live free anymore. You go ahead and go back to, you know, living in the traffic jams and the you know, outrageous laws and everything else that's going on. Enjoy. Bye bye.
Right.
You know?
Right. I don't know. That seems like a fairly easy and decent solution to any problems that may arise, but.
Except
I can tell you right now, like for me and my family, there wouldn't be any issue because I just want to, you know, live my life and have fun and enjoy good company and, you know, what else is there really to life? I mean,
you don't need all
this other crap.
That would be the whole point. If you had like 7-8 families, you actually would have a real social contract, not a fictional one, where you all contract together. That these are certain guidelines. I mean, nothing drastic. Don't steal. You know, pretty much it would all boil down to don't steal and don't harm anybody else on the island and do whatever the heck you want to do.
Right.
And that would actually be a real social contract because everybody in their own right mind would be sitting down and contracting together.
Right. Yeah. I think it's a wonderful solution. Like I said, whenever you guys are ready, let me know. I mean, especially if we had 5 or 6 couples, I already have enough money for that. I'm already there. I don't have enough money to buy my own island, but I have enough money right now if we had 5 or 6 different families. $1 million if you divide it 6 or 7 ways, sure.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll keep that in mind, and that'll be our goal. If we're going to minimize our little, you know, what we're doing. And,
right,
I'm already
a minimalist. The one thing I could suggest to anybody is that, you know, the first thing you could do to save some money, cut your cable. Get rid of it. You don't need it. I mean, my wife is trying to convince me. There's this thing, I think it's called a sling box, where you can just pay for a few channels that you want because she really misses Home and Garden TV, which is, I would imagine, where you're getting all this good information from with the tiny houses. I did see one episode on Home and Garden TV at my brother-in-law's house about tiny houses.
Yeah, that's all I really watch. I don't like watching the news. You can ask Austin. It's like, I'm like, turn the channel. I don't want to be lied to in my own home, you know?
Right.
It just
I'm the same way. I don't.
Well, not that piracy is possible, but there is satellite and a dish and a little hacking. Oops.
Well, you know, I did work for the phone company, so, you know, I do know my way around that kind of stuff, so. That could be my area of expertise on the island. Plus, I can run any heavy equipment that we may need, so I do have a few skills that would be useful.
I don't know how to farm, though, so
we need to figure out how to do that stuff.
Well, yeah, that's the whole thing is, of course, you'd want someone that's tech savvy that, you know, that could hack things. I mean, God forbid that you'd steal a satellite signal. I'm sure DirecTV would really be upset if you had an island out in the middle of nowhere and hacked into their signal.
You know, I'm not. whatever, you know. I don't deal with that anyway. Really, honestly, if we're in that sort of position where we wake up and hear the ocean and we see the ocean every day, I mean, really, are we going to want to sit in the house and play on our computers and watch TV? I'm not.
Well, I wouldn't mind hacking a Wi-Fi signal. That would be kind of nice to have a Wi-Fi signal so we could, you know, we have internet access. But aside from that, the TV part, you know, I would probably miss watching football and stuff like that, but that would be probably a couple months and then I'd be over it. You know, that we have rabbit ears, you know, so we can get regular TV, you know, regular channels. So I watch the football, but that's about all I ever watch. So, and that's, you know, that's a nice distraction every now and again, but that's all it is.
Well, exactly. I mean, if you had a like nice island out, you know, out in the ocean, Caribbean islands or something, there would be plenty of distractions, snorkeling, like Lisa said, ocean every day, fishing. I mean,
you'd have a few beers and a fishing pole, and I wouldn't need anything else.
You'd have to learn to eat that fish, Lisa.
You know, fresh fish, I guess I wouldn't mind as much. I'm just allergic to shellfish, as far as I know. So, or I used to be. I think it was about 10 years ago. So who knows? My body might have reacclimated, but I haven't gone back to having it because Fukushima. You know. And that's the part about the island thing I don't like. But you know what? You can't get away from poisons anywhere. I don't care where you are. And personally, I'd rather at least have it look and feel like freedom and easygoing and life than to be surrounded by chemtrails and toxins and, you know, fluoridated water. You know, get your fluoride out of my water. I'm on an island. I don't need your fluoride. I'm not going to use fluoride. Sorry.
Right.
You know. That's the other part.
Well, you have a lot more control over. I mean, there's still going to be certain elements that you just, no matter where you go and what you do, you can't get away from it. Like you said, the chemtrails and stuff like that. But you have a lot more control over what you're putting in your body if you have your own island and you're growing your own food, you're fishing out of the ocean or what have you. I mean, yeah, granted, you got the Fukushima radiation and all that stuff, but, you know, anywhere you're eating pretty much anywhere you're eating fish from, you got a high percentage that it's going to be poisoned, so to speak. So, you know, I don't know where you could go on this earth
to get away from that.
You know.
Exactly.
You do have a lot more control over.
I mean, it's unfortunate, but I agree, and I think I'd probably still keep it so minimal and just, you know, we always have goats and cows and horses and chickens and, you know, and you can even buy deer and let them run on the island. You know, you've got to have a decent size island. You know, it can't just be one of those little, it can't be one of those little, you know, 2 mile or 1 mile islands, you know, it'd have to be, you know, big enough to support a little bit of life and who knows? I think it can be done. I think we can all, you know, maybe it's a big pipe dream, but God, you just, you know, when you start seeing how harsh reality is and how things are heading, you know, I was thinking, you know, how do we fight it inside here, you know, here in America and everything else, and I've tried, and I'm not saying I've given up, but it's exhausting, and I don't see any end to it. I just see things getting worse and worse, and it almost gets to a point where you're just like, okay, where can I go to have a little peace?
Right. Oh, yeah, I agree 100%. It's, you know, just getting up and doing the 9-to-5 drudgery. You know, you go work, either you work for a place or you have your own business, and if you have your own business, it's not just 9-to-5, it's
pretty much 24/7, 365 days a year. That's, you know,
yep.
So it weighs on you, and that's just one aspect of it. That's just, you know, a part of what's wrong with this society. I mean, it's, I'm at my wit's end at this point. It's like, what am I doing it all for? You know, I have two small children that I don't hardly see. You know, I see them for a couple hours a night, and that's it. What am I doing this for? You know?
Well, but if you listen to these Bernie Sanders supporters and all these socialists, I mean, you know, that the business that you're putting all those hours and you built up in, I mean, that the workers should be the owners.
Yeah, you know the funny thing is people see the CEO or whoever, the business owner, they're making a lot of money and what have you. What they don't see is the amount of hours you put in and the amount of years it takes to get to that point where you're making, you know, you got employees that are taking home more money than you are when you first start
right.
out. You know, they're driving new cars and you got this crappy old car because you're putting every expense you have, every dollar you come in, you're putting it back into the business. They don't see that stuff because they've never experienced it. So, yeah, it's don't get me started on that crap because I hear that constantly. I see that on Facebook constantly. It's like you've never
right.
done it. You have no idea what it's about.
You living high on the hog.
Right. Well, and you know, the funny thing is I could afford a better lifestyle than I have right now, but I like to be a minimalist. But still, I have it fairly decent, and I don't have to struggle as much as I used to. But still, I put in the time. I took the risks.
Yeah.
You know, why shouldn't I get rewarded for that?
You should.
Exactly. But unfortunately, there are people out there that feel that you shouldn't be rewarded for that didn't mean anything. You know, it's that drives me crazy. Drives me crazy.
Well,
I think
what it is, it's stealing from hardworking people and putting it into lazy people's hands. And that's what
right.
I can't even stand all these entitlement programs. And not to say that I do believe when a society grows, you know, I think it's a good idea to have some sort of a safety net. Maybe at least have, you know, a place that people who are homeless can sleep or that everybody funds, or a place that, you know, you can go in for emergency room visits and not be charged. You know, that sort of thing to me makes sense. But, you know, when you're paying for all these other entitlements, it doesn't make a lot of sense, especially if you take away all the taxes and all the, you know, restrictions. It's like, you know, go out there and work, and then you're going to take it all home. And then, you know, buy whatever you want to buy with it. If you want to buy top-of-the-line, you know, health care, or if you want to buy, you know, if you want to go to the dentist, or if you want to do whatever you want to do, you'll have the money to do it. But
right now, we're
in such an oppressive society that it makes everybody into almost leeches because we're, you know, so poor that we're begging, I need help. I need help. This isn't fair. This
right.
isn't right. Instead of looking
well,
at the.
Yeah, but then you get like I posted that receipt. Someone bought two porterhouse steaks, like lobster tails, and five cases of Diet Mountain Dew, and puts it on food stamp debit card.
Yep. I have a lady that there's a little 7-Eleven right by my house. I see her almost every week. She tries to buy lottery tickets almost every single week on her EBT debit card, and the guy tells her every single time you got to pay cash for that. But she's driving a Mercedes Benz. You know, I don't have a Mercedes Benz, and I work for a living. But I don't know what she's doing, but whatever she's doing, and you know what? At the same time, I can't be mad at her because she's gaming the system, and you know, it's more of the system that's the issue than the person. Although the person is a problem too, so it's I'm kind of caught in there. I'm like, man, this is ridiculous. But at the same time, she's getting away with it. You know,
the system is pretty screwy. And you know, the thing about it is, I have a few times in my life used, like, food stamps for, like, a month
right.
or two,
ooh.
But that was it. And then I got off of it. I was, like, totally embarrassed, but I had to do it for a short period of time. And then recently I did my surgery. I had to. I didn't have health insurance, and I was literally going to die if I didn't get my operation. You know, and to me it's, like, in instances like where it's an emergency – and, you know, you're just helping out your fellow citizen, and there's enough people to support something like that, I don't see there anything wrong with a little bit of a safety net. You know, I know not everybody agrees with that, but I think it's just a good way to live your life is to care about your neighbor. Now, when you start, you know, robbing your neighbor of a lot of sizable chunk of money, so that they can kind of live on your skirt tails. No, that's not okay.
Well, we're going to leave that alone. I want you to wrap it up, Lisa. We're getting near the end of the program about minimalist living, and go ahead and wrap up the show. We're going to wrap it up, and then we're going to go see the Elvis impersonator.
Viva Las Vegas. Well, thanks again, everybody, for tuning in to the Truth Train with Liberty Lisa. Thank you for all the people who called in today, Austin Thomas and Brian, and also Ethan. I've appreciated all of your input, and hopefully you guys have enjoyed the show. Tune in tomorrow night, and we're doing Guerrilla Radio. It's going to be a fun one. We're actually going to do it about the things politicians say.
Uh-huh. No, it's gonna be shit politicians say.
Oh, okay. He's got a cuss. Well, there you go. So, thanks so much for joining in. I'm wrapping it up. Have a great evening, and we'll catch you tomorrow.
Thanks a lot, everybody.
Bye.